Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. As I record this, the sun is shining, but chances are, if you're listening to this on Memorial Day weekend, I'm probably celebrating my grandson's graduation. So, today we have a double feature for you. First up, we have a Desert Oracle radio episode from May 21st, 2021. It was produced by Ken Lane. Here is Under the Hood with the Wood Rats.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And on this night in the merry month of May, we are having a little birthday party here in the radio studio. Just me and the low energy ghost and that old owl hooting from the upper branches of the big Joshua tree outside. Because his radio show is now 4 years old. Pretty much grown out of the cute stage. Or maybe that's age 10. It really varies with the individual. And whether they were ever cute to start with. Because some creatures go in reverse. Our beloved kangaroo rats start off as miserable little squirming, sightless gummy worms, just the most awful things. And then, through the magic of the absurdly long digital code sequence that builds the mature animal out of thin air and rat milk, we get the delightful kangaroo rat. And all of its rodent cousins. A few days back, I was walking down this dry wash full of desert willows, and I nearly stepped on a squirming little kangaroo rat, just blindly going nowhere in the warm morning sunshine. It had that beautiful tawny fur on the head and the back. So I thought maybe it's a kangaroo rat. But when I scooped it up with my hat to relocate the buddy about 3 feet over into the shade of a dense stand of Mormon tea, the legs seemed a little short to my eyes. So maybe it was the kangaroo mouse, the mouse version of the kangaroo rat. But then the tails seemed pretty short, but I assure you all this was not a wood rat. Or, as we call them in 29 Palms, a truck roach. There is nothing so inevitable and disappointing than trying to start your car only to find the wood rats have nested on your engine. On your engine! And then shoot off all the utterly exposed wiring that renders your truck worthless. You went to bed with a functioning vehicle. And overnight, it's all over. A likely statistic is that more than 47% of desert people have had at least two vehicles destroyed beyond repair by wood rats. They did a study on the desert wood rat, in particular the Mojave Desert population of wood rats. And it turns out that Mojave wood rats cannot survive the kind of nearly year-round heat that is becoming fairly normal in a lot of the Southwest in this century. When it's too hot all the time, their livers cannot process the toxins in their source of food, the creosote bush. In 2016, the New York Times reported on the wood rat research done by Patrice Kernath, then a biologist at the University of Utah. "There's not much more they can eat out here," she said. "Oh, but they can eat all the wires under the hood. That seems to go down just fine. Can't take the heat of climate change. Makes the creosote too toxic even for a wood rat. But do not worry, they will climb right up your furnace hot engine and settle in for an evening of gnawing away every rubber coated wire hooked up to an electric battery. That's just fine." The New York Times finishes with this: "As the climate warms, the wood rats will disappear from the Mojave, or, if they are fortunate, adapt," said Miss Kernath. Well, as long as automobiles exist, friends, the wood rat will not go very hungry. Electric cars, I'm told, have even more expensive, not covered by warranty wiring than our old gas guzzlers. As for the kangaroo mouse baby, I don't know what it was doing there. Maybe a gopher snake had just blasted through the rat holes and this was a lone, stunned survivor. Maybe it had the hantavirus. We all used to be so scared of the hantavirus out here, and I still very much dislike dusty old cabins or long locked up storage spaces with corners full of dried up deer mouse droppings all covered in a couple of decades worth of asbestos and cigarette butts and meth lab residue. As they say in the business, your chances of contracting hantavirus are 1 in 13 million. As long as you're nowhere around a desert cabin full of hantavirus. Whatever the situation, I set the little buddy down deep under the Mormon tea cover, where it would be shaded all day if it managed to survive. Most of our rat and mouse friends have their eyes open and alert in 14 days or so, and that tracks pretty closely with the fur growing out and the tail not being pink anymore, etc. The eyes could start opening at any minute in that case. It had gravity more or less figured out. As for mother and the other half dozen siblings, well, the snake's gotta eat too. Blessed are you hungry, for ye shall be satisfied. Did you get brainwashed into the hustle? Which went from a dance at the neighborhood disco to the miserable, ceaseless till death hassle known as the grind? As the human and natural world continues to collapse and remake itself and seek salvation, I will encourage you, if it's possible, to quit hustling. You will not be rewarded for your hustling efforts, because they will continue to move the goalpost, change the rules, and you will get nothing but heartburn and panic attacks for your trouble. And yes, they will sell you cures for both on credit. Something we're looking for, at least for a while, even if we've long given up on finding it. Something that ticks all the boxes. When you're 12, it might be a mini bike. Ride around in circles in the dirt until your parents throw you out at 13. When you're a romantic young adult who managed to read a few books, it might be an old apartment in Prague or Paris. Maybe a surfboard in a shack on the beach in Mexico. Or a stone tower overlooking the sea in Ireland. A jackrabbit cabin on 5 acres of creosote in North Joshua Tree, a house trailer in Pahrump. You move through your mission, one mostly accidental location after another, like the Stations of the Cross. Sometimes you just need to see what's going on. You want music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air, empires falling down, civil war, somewhere you might get yourself free for a while. Or maybe shot in the crossfire. Beats playing video games. When the cops and the soldiers and the politicians and the captains of industry are busy fighting each other over ancient ethnic wars, or fish imports, or border skirmishes, or massive political scandals, or some 100-year-old dictator finally falling over dead, sometimes they lay off bothering everybody else for a little while. And for a little while, it becomes a magic city. Anything goes. But those places are getting harder to find. The captains of industry and their security cameras are getting better at laying down the law around the clock just about everywhere. It helps that everybody's carrying around a little personal surveillance device. Like in Washington, D.C. a few months back, the whole federal government capital complex was already pretty near fenced in, like the Green Zone in Baghdad after the occupation of Iraq some years back. One thing they are not lacking is more fencing, higher fencing, concrete barriers, razor wire walls, gun towers, searchlights, motion detectors, facial recognition systems, drug hounds, troop carriers, sonic weapons, Klieg lights, secret cameras in the asphalt that check for car bombs or improperly laced shoes. So when those people chartered jets to Washington to cosplay a revolution, they made sure to broadcast all of it on Twitch and Discord and YouTube and all these systems we willingly sign up for, willingly use to plot out our own dumb little Marvel movies in real time. Because on social media, you're not the customer, you're the product. A kind of mass homeless camp down by the Salton Sea. And even the tourists go there to visit, take pictures and videos of the voluntary inmates. Like seeing the monkeys at some rundown zoo. As far as I can tell, Slab City has mostly been left alone because the authorities would prefer those people stay out there. Baking in the awful heat, breathing the poison dust off that Dead Sea, fighting amongst themselves. Better there, the authorities figure, than seeing the wretched crashing the gates into Thunderbird Heights up in Rancho Mirage, where every mansion house estate holds enough easily resold wealth to give everybody in Slab City a decent individual retirement account. Most of it, which you never see in Instagram pictures, is a parking lot for snowbirds. These are elderly people of minimal resources, mostly. And they move their worn-out RVs to the low desert in the wintertime. They live off Social Security, disability, whatever kind of government assistance they can get. And they mostly watch TV in the motorhome and drive to Costco or Walmart every now and then. There's a grocery store down the road, too, for weekly provisions. It's an indictment of the American economic system, is what it is. These were people who had to give up their home, maybe in one of our cyclical foreclosure and eviction waves, maybe because their lousy private health insurance didn't cover a common illness of old age. Maybe they were designated redundant by their last employer, and that was it. Lose the crumbling tract house. Lose the mortgage car. And now you're sitting out there under the sun in Slab City. Maybe it's freedom, or maybe it's just a poorhouse where you show yourself in. That's what it was the first time I drove through in the early 1980s. There are spots like this all over the Southwest. From West Texas to pretty much any Walmart parking lot in a depressed area of Arizona or New Mexico. Driving west out of Flagstaff, there's a 10-mile stretch of national forest land that serves the same purpose. Just goes on and on. In such places, most of those RVs and trucks aren't going far, no matter what the nice lady from the Forest Service says has to be done. But Slab City has some colorful junkyard art, and it's close to Palm Springs, so it has a tourist economy of sorts, or it did before the COVID. The whole thing fits into about a square mile, about a section in Southwest Desert Land track map speak. So it's not too big, Slab City. If the weather doesn't kill you in the process, you can walk the boundaries in an hour's time, 15 minutes per mile, northeast, south, and west again. Long as you look like a nice tourist with a roll of 20s to distribute, you'll be all right. The people squatting there in the free zones, they won't bother you. But the Riverside County Sheriff's deputies patrol pretty much all the time looking for meth sales. And there's La Migra, the border patrol. They never really let anybody alone, not in Slab City and not anywhere within the ever-growing and widening jurisdiction of the U.S.-Mexican border. Even the roads out of a place become oppressive when you know where they all lead. Sometimes the best thing is just to get on a Greyhound or something. Bring a bottle and a brown bag. See where you wake up. It's all the same anyway. Anywhere you go, there you are. Dollar Generals and churches and run-down stucco strip malls. Junkyards and military bases. Tract houses and trailer parks.
Something had to be done.
Seems to be the only thing we can do, Sam.
Yep.
Well, I guess this is the day, man. Nothing's shown up, and we gotta do something about it.
Now, we're here. The base is over here, and the nearest oasis is here, 60 miles southeast of us. That's about 6 days' walking distance for men in our condition. Now, the way I figure it, two of us should make a stab at walking to that oasis. And if one should weaken, the other one might get through. But they'll each need 3 gallons of water for the hike. I don't think a quarter day is nearly enough for that much strain. If they drink 1 gallon of it slowly in the 12 hours before they leave, there won't be so much to carry.
Well, 6 gallons from what we had now would leave enough for about 8 days, wouldn't it, Gil?
If we stay on the same rations.
I told you we should have pulled out of here. Now we don't even have the strength to walk.
We had to stay here at first. If anything had flown over us, they would have spotted the airplane. But the brakes were against us, that's all. Nothing did.
Now, I think I ought to make the try, men. I know the desert a little better. And Gil can take over from me here. You can keep the signals going while I'm gone. That'll give us a chance both ways. Now, what do you think?
I think it's the only thing to do.
Who are you going to take with you, Skipper?
Well, how about you, Bob? You seem to be holding up all right.
I'm for it, Skipper.
Good. But now understand this one thing very clearly. Gil is going to be the boss around here. And whatever he says about rations or anything else goes. Is that understood?
Jack?
Sure. Fine. Well, I'm going to start tonight. You have to travel light in the desert or you just don't travel far. Water, you'll take a maximum load of that. And that means a minimum of everything else. Sam took only the essentials. Goggles, compass, flashlight, knife, matches, bandages, eye salve, iodine, sunburn lotion, biscuits, fruit and chocolate bars, dextrose tablets, dust masks and spiral puttees. And he traded shoes with Bob because nothing short of GIs can take that desert trek. Remember that, will you? Always fly in shoes you can walk home in, if that's what you've got to do. And Phil turned out some walking sticks, hollow tubing that would also double as tent poles later on. Plenty of tact and diplomacy. Always a must with natives, desert, jungle, or anywhere else.
Here's another box of dextrose tablets. Stick them in your pocket.
Okay.
Yeah, put some gum in your pocket, too, Bob.
Thanks. Here's your pull. Well, looks like I'm all set.
Hey, wait a minute.
What are you going to use?
Oh, I'll be okay. Yeah, how about that?
Here's your canteen.
Thank you.
How's it feel?
That's going to be swell.
Now, make sure that the boy's wounds are covered with sulfur powder and always bandaged. We don't want to take any chances on infections. And, keep up the log, Gil. Make a good record.
Right.
Bob?
Gil?
Good luck, Sam.
Thank you. Now, if you don't fly over us before we get to the Oasis, we'll be back here with help in about 7 days.
About 25 miles. At least that's what I get by my count.
25 miles. Not even halfway yet.
Come on, let's try to get some more rest, huh?
Become of our mystery visitors, our angels and gods and aliens who used to regale a cursed few with elaborate con jobs. Like, the world will end on such and such date. Nobody listens to them anymore. They don't photograph well on the bad phone cameras we carry around, so mostly they don't put on a show anymore. They've lowered the stakes, lowered the payout like a corporate casino chain. The Christians and 100 other cults promise the apocalypse, the uncovering, the great reshuffle, the end of the old world, starting with the generation who knew Jesus. Verily, some of you in this generation will see his return, etc. Had to keep kicking that can down the road. Lately, nobody even cares when the Pentagon's trying to scare you over their little UFOs nobody else seems to be seeing. When everybody's having nervous breakdowns all the time, there is a diminishing growth market for more nervous breakdowns. The flying saucers of the moment seem to only trouble the Navy, the Pentagon, the war machine, the aerospace contractors. They swarm around helpless warships like barefoot Viet Cong around helpless overloaded American GIs. Or so they tell us. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. And heard on many fine community radio stations, including Lookout FM in Los Angeles, Hollywood, Burbank, and Pacific Palisades, KZMU in Moab, Utah, 88.1 FM KFCF in Fresno, and always on the podcast, which you can get at DesertOracle.com. Thanks to our patrons who support the program at patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and I am your host, Ken Lane. Thank you for joining us tonight. Enjoy this Desert Spring weekend, and good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. In this next Desert Oracle Radio episode, Ken Lane includes an interview with Kid Congo Powers. Maybe you've heard about his music or his memoir? Well, here is Some New Kind of Kick.
Night has fallen on the desert, but it's about time. It
notes about time and place. This place is called Wonder Valley. As you always hear people saying, I wonder what I'm doing out here. Sometimes you're just driving up Amboy Road, thinking about joining the Marines again. And the only thing that's keeping you from the few and the proud, is that last minute right turn on Amboy Road. And you wonder what's this way instead. Well, there's meth shacks, heart attacks, water tanks and rattlesnakes, TV antennas reaching up into the bone-dry sky like the arms of Joshua, with the cinder block walls tumbling down. And you think, maybe I should have just joined the Marines back in town. I could cash my VA check and go in the garage, start up the old wreck, take the back way to Vegas, El Camino del Desierto, with La Migra hiding up at the Vista Point, ready to haul your ass away if you're hungry enough to need a job. I'll wear the rabbit stash across the two lane, because there's not much to do there at night. So you wait for the rumble and you wait for the light. But when it's almost too late, when the car's almost there, that's when you run. Well, if you don't make it, there's plenty more of you. And then you find yourself parked on the side of the road, parked haphazardly in the sand and the broken beer bottles and the cigarette butts. Kind of stunned and amazed, stomping through the sagebrush because there's a light up on the ridge. And now it's just behind the ridge. So it's out of sight. And now you are going out of your mind. All alone in the desert night, just you and them. Where the gods lie waiting for moments like that. This is Desert Oracle Radio. That's red, blue, black, silver over there.
This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. Tonight we are delighted to have Kid Congo Powers on the line from Tucson. He's an all-time great in rock and roll and possessed of a singular guitar style that sounds just like being on a desert highway in the middle of the night, trying to outrun God or the devil, or both. With the Gun Club and the Cramps, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and the Pink Monkey Birds, Kid Congo has made some of the best records of the past half century, and made one of my very favorites from 2021, the 14-minute long He Walked In. You can pre-order his memoir, Some New Kind of Kick, which will be out in October. Welcome to the program, Kid Congo Powers.
Thanks. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm good. I'm getting ready for the hot weather, which means I'm not going to go out in daytime anymore.
I'm right with you. We're already in the hundreds here.
Good Lord. When does it get comfortable to go out?
Again? When will I leave the house again?
Yeah.
In the time of day or the year? Time of year?
Day, year, you know.
I'm usually up early. I have cats that wake me up at the crack of dawn. And then, I live in the desert, and there are so many coyotes and javelina and whatnot running around. I actually only let my cats out if they're on a leash.
Oh.
And so I walk my cats, and I try to do that before it gets too hot. But now they're in this, they're very insistent on waking me up 5:30, 6 o'clock. But for here, that is good, because by 9 o'clock, you want to go back inside.
Oh, yeah. Cats on a leash. All right. If I see somebody walking cats on a leash in Tucson, I'll honk and wave.
Exactly.
This track you did, He Walked In, is really hypnotic and beautiful. And there's this video, this one long shot of you walking and dancing through the Sonoran Desert. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the song we had made right before the pandemic, and it was released during the pandemic, and we were going to make a video for it. And I wanted to really, first utilize being here, but also it was in the major part. It was in the summer, when you don't want to be out walking around for 14 minutes. I had seen these films by a filmmaker named David Fenster, and he had actually befriended my partner, Ryan, at the MoCA, the Contemporary Art Museum of Tucson. And he had been doing a residency there, and he showed his films. And I really loved his films. And they had a lot to do with nature, people, spirit world, ghosts that inhabit nature, inanimate objects, and psychic phenomenon, things of that sort. And he ended up moving here, and his wife moved here. And I just said, this is the guy to make a video. And so we had discussed it. We had these ideas to do all these like millions of shots and, you know, like a series of images and a big long thing. And then David saw a video I did that was just, I had just stuck a camera out of a train window going from the Metro North from New Haven to New York. And he said, why don't we do something like that? Because, you know, we're living in the desert. It's locked down. There will be no one around. And the scenery will do the work, and it will fit this song, which was about a visitation from another time, another realm. I had a dream about the singer of the Gun Club, Jeffrey Lee Pierce, who was a band I was in. And he was a great friend of mine, and actually you mentioned my book. There's a major portion of that dedicated to our friendship and relationship. So he said, why don't we just do a long shot and just do one of, it's a couple images, but let's just do this. You know, he suggested the walking through the desert, because the desert is gorgeous for one thing. And there was a time there were some wildfires had been going on in the Northwest, in Los Angeles actually. And so the air had a certain glow to it. And we were out in the desert up near the Star Pass is the area. And that was, you know, well, all of Arizona, but you know, all of America was native land, but it is not more apparent there because of gorgeousness and the feeling of being out in the open. And so we went to a campground, which we knew would be deserted because no one was traveling at that point, and shot that in the day and the evening. And it was kind of not a lot of narrative going on, and it just fit the song so well. And it gave room, and it gave a big outdoor feel to the song. and to the images in the song and the subject of a visitation from another world, another plane, of a friend, because I had had this dream, and it was so visceral that when I woke up, I was like, that was something that just really happened. I felt it, I tasted it, I felt like, oh, that was a real visit from Jeffrey Lee Pierce. I was like, that was not just another dream. And so I wrote down this, scribbled down some text really quickly, just not to lose it. And we made a song, and that just seemed to fit really well. We were making an EP. We knew it was going to be a full album. So Larry Hardy at In the Red Records, he puts out my records, said, well, why don't you do one of your, you know, really long songs, like, you know, a 4-minute song, a 5-minute song. And so we made the song. We're like, oh yeah, we can do that, you know, 5 to 7 minutes. And then when we finished the song, we asked the engineer, how long was that? He said, 14 minutes. Yeah, so we were so lost in the song, we had no idea about the time or what was going on.
Oh, that's wild. And it's got this wonderful sound that's just ideal for driving on the desert highway. Yeah, I used to live next to Eric Burdon and Joshua Tree. And it reminded me a little bit towards the end there of some of those long, weird tracks that he did with War, you know, that sort of Chicano rock mixed with English R&B and everything.
Well, you mentioned that. That was a huge influence, you know, and a huge, you know, War. I love War. And the Eric Burdon and War stuff, you know, to mix, like that, like you said, it was a mix of those styles of R&B, Chicano rock, and psychedelia, and psychedelic imagery. And I felt that that was some kind of parallel. We didn't set out to make a Spill the Wine or Sky Pilot or anything. But when we made it, I was like, oh, that is very much, we were definitely influenced by Eric Burdon and War on this.
Such a great sound. I remember seeing on, I guess it was probably Instagram or something, when you all moved to Arizona, I guess it's been a couple of years now. What prompted that move, and how has it been out there?
Yeah, well, it was prompted by a couple of things that again, my partner Ryan has family here. So we've been coming to Tucson. I've been with Ryan since, 2005? So like every Christmas time, I've been coming to Tucson and spending a week, 10 days, whatever. And I really, really loved the feeling of it. I loved the sky. I love that Tucson was not a big town. It's a small town, a small city. It seemed much more doable. You know, we had come from New York and DC, and it was, it was just time for a major change. And I really wanted, I said, I want to see a big sky.
Oh, you get that there.
And yeah, I got it. And I said, I want to be somewhere warm from not the East Coast anymore, but I got that here too. But so it was a thing of family, I think, and it was a desire for reinvention and space.
Although you've been dead for quite some time, you walked into my room, you walked into my mind, a memory lodged in my brain, put me on a plane to visit you.
G Tucson has a really dreamy quality to it. Like I said, a reservation. So the Pascal Yaqui and the Tohono O'odham people, it 100% has a magic to it.
Yeah. And you're out hiking and exploring, and you're doing the full Arizona experience.
Yeah, well, I said, big sky, nature, again, things the opposite of any big city.
I'm really looking forward to your book, both because I love punk rock biographies and autobiographies, and I'm curious about all these aspects of your life as a musician, as this underground fashion icon, the work you did with ACT UP, the direct action for people with AIDS, as a Chicano artist, etc. Do you see a consistent thread through your life, or did you see it after writing the book?
I've sort of seen it, but after writing the book, I definitely saw it. When all these disparate stories were pulled together and made into one story, then I saw it. I finished it during the pandemic. You know, I was able to have that reflection to put it together and work with. Actually, the co-writer, Chris Campion, lives in Joshua Tree. He's a Brit in Joshua Tree. So I've been working a lot for years. We've been working on together on it. You know, he was kind of a sounding board for me when I started. And then when I was able to pick an editor, I was like, this is who I want. And I met him when he was living in London or Berlin. But coincidentally, he ended up in the desert. We all end up in the desert.
I saw you had a concert in Las Vegas, I think, about a week ago. You were playing with The Damned. Mm-hmm. How is that? What's the audience like these days?
Well, it's a mixture of young, very young, and very old, my age. And it was a real mixture. It was jam-packed. They are the classic band. They were the first punk rock band to come to the United States from the British punk scene. I saw them in 1977 in L.A., the Starwood. And Dave Vanian has been a friend he was a fan of the Cramps and the Gun Club. Actually ended up married to Patricia Morrison, who was in the Gun Club. So
it all comes back together.
All roads lead to. We were just asked to do it and to do a show. And of course I wanted to do it because of friends, and I love the band and been a long time fan. And they were great as ever, you know, and they, I've been through all their changes with them and styles and types of music, and they're quite psychedelic at times, and that's my favorite kind of thing. We're about the live experience. We're about the live rock band weaving magic more than the technological aspects of it, weaving the magic, you know, and we use older equipment and vintage equipment. And, you know, I'm not saying that's better, but I also, that's just the way I know how to work, and that's what I best. And I like, you know, that I'm, that magic that is created between people and the alchemy, you know, it's all about the alchemy of people, the audience, and sounds, instruments, make me one drum and a one string guitar, and you can still make magic if you wanted to, if you tried hard enough. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some magical experience in music, because that's what music does for me. And that's the kind of music that I love and I've grown up with. And I like the clashing of styles being mixed also, which I consider alchemy, mixing musics together. You know, I mean, the Cramps, a very great example of that, mixing psychedelic with rockabilly and with punk attitude. And you see that's a dime a dozen these days, but when the Cramps first came out in the late 70s, it was miraculous what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a frightening and hilarious and all of these things. And that goes for the Ramones, that goes for Patti Smith, it goes for many, many groups like at that time. But that was it, was like the unexpected mixture of styles that created one style. And, you know, the Cramps, I saw them when they were, I saw them at CBGB and in LA when they would come and play the small clubs. And when they played, it was like either a riot or an orgy was gonna happen. Yeah. You know, it was gonna break out. And that was just the reaction. Poison Ivy has often said, you know, it's about rhythm. If you have rhythm, and drum beat and rhythms and lots of rhythm guitar, and you know, you just keep that churning, you know, and that's a make sexual energy, you know. Bo Diddley, a great example. I had a very good learning from the best, really, you know, good fortune.
What a world to be in to make you a professional artist.
Yeah.
And
they were all people with very strong vision and very strong ethics not to compromise that. People ask, what did I learn? And that's what I learned is,
yeah,
don't pander. Don't pander. Stay with the vision.
Although you've been dead for quite some years, it's lovely to see my friend. Walked in.
The segment was called Great One in Ancient Egypt and New Republic Egypt. If you went to the Temple of Sekhmet somewhere on the Nile in the time of the pharaohs, you'd be treated very well. Thousands of people attended these festivals with much drinking of beer and wine, and they also had this mushroom brew for one of the days, like a lot of the mystery religions, to broaden people's horizons after a busy work week. And because Sekhmet is the goddess of intoxication, once you were resting comfortably on the porch of drunkenness, this is a real place. You can visit it today. In Egypt, I mean, there's a porch of drunkenness, right? The musicians would arrive once everybody had been ritually drinking for a good half a day. And they start to pass out on the porch of drunkenness. So these musicians would come in these lines with the drummers at the rear. And people would kind of come out of their reverie and become alert as this entire mobile orchestra was circling them. All for Sekhmet, the goddess of war with the head of a lioness, goddess of healing who spared her people from the plague, but would send it in heavy waves upon her enemies. Called the Mistress of Dread, Sekhmet, whose hot breath created the desert itself, who people of Egypt and people today called with the simple words, Great One. So the priestesses would chant out her prayer as she became one with the priestesses and with the drummers and the celebrants. And this is the prayer to Sekhmet. I am she who cometh forth. I am yesterday, and I am the seer of millions of years. I am the power of the divine judge. I dwell in the east. I am the lady of eternity, the unveiled one. My name is created to defy all evil. I am the flame that shineth in the sanctuary. I am Sekhmet. For 5,000 years, Sekhmet has been worshipped on this planet. That's when she's first known, first appearing in, what was it, 2930 BC. nearly 5,000 years ago in Upper Egypt, worshipped in her great temples up and down the river cities until her worship was slowly phased out with the Coptic Christians and then the followers of Allah. Although well into the first millennium, the cult was still active. It was just in private. But now is her time. And these are the days of Sekhmet. If she, as promised, destroys with the fire, that makes all land as desert. When she drinks the Nile, when she covers the land with blood. So you can understand why people would prefer to be a little intoxicated before they had to hear all of that. Thank you all for coming out here tonight and listening to our 2022 first show, I think. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and all Summer's Eve Desert Rendezvous for inviting us. From Amboyne to Isaacs and right between them both, right here in Wonder Valley, this is Desert Oracle Radio, coming to you tonight from the Palms on Amboyne Road. Red, Blue, Black, Silver is wholly responsible for the soundscapes heard on this program. And as we did not bring our pack of coyotes, due to zoning regulations and the health department, etc., as we say farewell for now, if anybody wants to throw in their own coyote howls, we can kind of fake it. Oh, you made them proud. They're in the car. Thanks a lot, everybody. Good night from the Voice of the Deaf.
Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to every volunteer, underwriter, and supporter of KGVM. And thank you for listening. You can leave me a voicemail or text at 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. See you next week. And happy Memorial Day.